You're listening to WQEE 99.1 FM, The Key in Noonan, Georgia. Home of Braves Country with Mac McGee and the Armchair Quarterbacks. Weekdays, 3 p.m. Eastern to 5 p.m. Eastern. Right here on The Key and YouTube.com at Braves Country.
You're in Braves country.
Good afternoon, Braves country. We have had update after update on our work computers, and that has caused an unbelievable amount of issues going into these live shows. Just before we go on, once again, we had another problem, so I do apologize. We're planning on coming on the top of the hour. We're a few minutes late, but we will make up the time to you. Let's go. We are a jam-packed show. We got things coming and going. We got stuff for the Atlanta Braves that are happening. We got stuff all around Major League Baseball, which just continue to flow in. And as things come about, we will update you as we've got our hand on the pulse and keeping an eye on it, make sure there's not other breaking news that has happened. Braves made another signing today. We'll get into that here in a second. Yankees, I'm sure most of y'all know by now, made a huge trade. So that is going to be item number one. We'll get into that here in the top here. And the Padres have their eyes on a very highly coveted free agent outfielder. The Diamondbacks make a big move. Joe Kelly agrees to something that could be indicative of what's about to happen with Shohei Ohtani. And Vaughn Grissom, we got news on him, so let's go ahead and get into it. I'm sure most of y'all know by now, and by the way, anyone that has any questions in the chat, fire them away. We will answer them. This is the end of the winter meetings. We wanted to do kind of a recap today, and then going forward here in the offseason, we'll be here every Monday and Wednesday. Those will be at 4 o'clock. We've been right around that time period all week long because it's really been an ebb and flow of what's been going on. And I make commitments to be in other places as well covering our great sport of baseball. So that's why it's been a little wonky this week. We had planned 4 Eastern every single day this week, Monday through Thursday, and instead what ended up happening was we were between 3 and 4 every single day, and if it weren't for the technical difficulties, we would have been at the top of each hour, but instead, here we go. All right. First of all, dissect the Yankees trade. I think it's an enormous trade. The Yankees add another Bronx Bomber as they get Juan Soto. Now, Juan Soto is going to go to New York, and the way it's being portrayed right now is that you're going to have Soto in right field. Remember, they just made a trade for Verdugo in left field, and Aaron Judge is going to be their center fielder. Stanton will be their designated hitter. Now, I'm sure they'll shuffle it from time to time, give guys days off, et cetera, et cetera. But that's typically what they're looking at. And on a one-game basis, I don't have a problem with that game plan. The problem is the wear and tear that playing center field, especially in Yankee Stadium, but playing center field day in and day out, it's going to be interesting to see how Aaron Judge holds up. You know, he's had his injury problems as well. He's a big guy. Obviously, just like all of us, he's not getting any younger. And they signed him to a long-term deal, and they're going to ask him for at least this year to be their center fielder. Now, I would think long-term after this season, they would put him probably in left and groom or acquire a true defensive center fielder. But right now, unless they can move Verdugo, this is what they have. Now, if I'm Brian Cashman in the New York Yankees, I'm trading Verdugo. And I'm going to get a defensive center fielder. I would love an upside with the bat, but I'm not going to be as concerned with it as I am going to be concerned with making sure that Aaron Judge and Juan Soto and Stanton the DH go to the post every single day. That's the number one concern. You put Verdugo in, and for what little, whatever you think Verdugo's ceiling is, it's minimal. And with that being said, there's not much of a chance that Verdugo's offense is going to even out on the wear and tear you're going to put on Aaron Judge playing center field. Does he get end up on the IL because of it? Does his production fall off at all? I'm more concerned with that if I'm Brian Cashman, and I wouldn't be surprised if they do try to bring in a true center fielder and let Judge and Soto play the corners. It would just make a hell of a lot more sense. And honestly, at that rate, you're probably putting Judge at right field and putting Soto in left. Soto is not the greatest of defenders. He's solid, but you'd feel much better having Soto in left, Judge in right, and then try to acquire a center fielder. We'll get into some ideas on that, but to dissect the rest of the trade, the other big fish in that trade was Michael King, who is heading to the Padres, and this is going to help offset a few things. Remember, they're losing Seth Lugo in free agency. They're obviously losing Blake Snell in free agency. And this is going to help them try to piece together that pitching staff. Now, he did have 8 starts in 2023. And in those 8 starts, which is what, who is this, MLB Network was trying to brag upon. In those 8 starts, and they were spot starts, they weren't back-to-back-to-back. A couple of things jump out at you. Number one, he had a 1.88 ERA in those starts. Pretty damn good. He averaged less than 5 innings per start. Pretty damn bad. So what is he really? Is he a starter that you can expect to go 5-6 innings? Obviously, the ERA would go up a little bit. But if you could get 5-6 innings out of Michael King, we'll say 25 to 30 starts in the year, and he can average around 6 innings, probably a tad less, but somewhere in that neighborhood. And you could keep his ERA anywhere around the 3 mark, maybe a touch low, maybe a touch high, then you would look at that as a great deal, as they do have a few years of control with Michael King. And there were a couple of the guys like Drew Thorpe and whatnot that are in the deal. But those are the two major pieces. Now, the deal with Soto is, if you're wondering, like, why in the world would you want to lose Soto? First of all, I think his arbitration number was almost $30 million, which is just insane. He's going to be a free agent at the end of this year. Everything has pointed to so far that Juan Soto is looking to literally break the bank. That Juan Soto wants a deal that's going to be around $500 million. He's looking to get a 10 to 13 year deal somewhere in that neighborhood. Probably not average $50 million, but he's looking to average well north to the number where it would equate to almost $500 million. That's the initial reports. Whether or not he gets it or not, that's a whole different ball of wax. But that's what you're dealing with, and he's going to go to free agency because We've already seen the Yankees are not just going to hand the money over to him. They're going to wait to see what he can do. That's what they did in the first go around with Aaron Judge. Remember, everyone kept thinking that Aaron Judge was going to be the guy, that Aaron Judge was going to be the guy that they locked up, that didn't get to go to free agency. Instead, they tried to lowball him, and he said, to hell with you, I'm going to bet on myself. He goes out and hits 60-plus home runs, and then he ends up bringing a $300 million deal plus. That's what they're looking at, what's about to happen with Soto. The difference with Soto is Soto's a little younger than what Judge was, and he's going to be looking for a deal somewhere around the 500 range. I don't know if he'll actually get to 500, but that's what he's going to originally be looking for. So unless you're going to go to the table right now and say, here's 13-year, 14-year, whatever the length of contract is, and here's your $500 million, you're not going to get him locked up long-term. And with that being said, it's a huge gamble. And I heard someone today, it's kind of interesting, they were arguing back and forth about, even with their track record and as accomplished as Brian Cashman is and as revered as Aaron Boone is, did this move make 2024 for the New York Yankees make or break? Did they just make, because of this trade, did they just make it all or nothing? I'll make you the argument. It was already there. It was already there. The New York Yankee fans are fed up with what a lot of teams would be okay with, but most Yankee fans are not, which is they have not won a World Series since 2009, nor been to. So it's not like they're falling just short. They did not make the playoffs last year. They're getting lapped in their own division by much cheaper payrolls in Baltimore and Tampa Bay. And now the word is Toronto is going all in and trying to land Shohei Ohtani. I still think he ends up a Dodger, but if I was, from everything that I've heard and read over the last 24 hours since we last talked, if I was handicapping this, I would have Dodgers 1A, Toronto 1B right now. In the third team, because I think they're gonna back the truck up. I just don't know if he's willing to go there, would be San Francisco. And if you're looking for a dark horse, a team that could come out of nowhere and sign him, it would be the Chicago Cubs. Over and over and over again, you're hearing more people that were at the winter meetings with their ear on the ground, and what they're saying is the Atlanta Braves were never in on Shohei Ohtani. Now, we were being fed false reports, and what one guy basically said, I forget the term he actually used, but he was basically saying clickbait. It was clickbait, which is what I kind of figured it was, because if you remember when this whole thing started, I believe that the Braves were never going to back the truck up for a guy who wasn't going to be able to pitch this year because they have big-time pitching issues. What pitcher do I think the Braves will get? We'll get into that in a second here, Leslie. The guy that I really wanted, that I had my – so two of the guys that I was really hoping the Atlanta Braves would bring in are off the board. Sonny Gray – was signed, what, a little over a week ago, but that was mainly because Sonny Gray was going to be a cheap option, was going to be a short option. Remember, he signed for 3 years, 25 a year, to go to St. Louis, and that, to me, that would have been a perfect fit for Atlanta. Why they didn't kick those tires a little harder, I don't know. What it tells me is they've got a bigger eye on a bigger prize. The next guy that went off the board is the one that I really liked. And is this not hilarious? E-Rod, Eduardo Rodriguez, signs a four-year, $80 million deal with the Arizona Diamondbacks. By the way, he once again came up with a list of 10 teams he does not want to be traded to. So it's really interesting that he comes up with this because he just does not want to be moved. But if you remember, what were we told at the trading deadline on why Eduardo Rodriguez did not want to go to the Dodgers and contend. And I told you I thought it was horse crap at the time, and it appears that it was. He said that he did not want to be that far from the East Coast, so he declined the trade. And I told you then that's not what it is. It was because he had 3 years left on his deal, but he had an opt-out, and he was looking to cash in. If Eduardo Rodriguez would have stuck with his deal, he would have had 3 years. I think it was just north of 45. It was either 46 or 47 million. Okay. Instead, he's getting a fourth year, and as opposed to just averaging just over 15 million, he's now going to get 4 years, 20 million. And I believe there's also a club option on there. So that was it had nothing to do with going to the West Coast, because he just agreed to go live in Arizona for four years. There's no way in hell that was it. I mean, unless he's just deathly afraid of the ocean, and he's okay being west, but not that far west. None of it makes a whole hell of a lot of sense. So I believe it's what I said before. He did not want to pitch in the postseason because he knows he's not getting any extra money on that, and he wanted to get to the free agent window. I can't really blame him. But when you come up with that narrative, man, if you really want people to believe that story, and I'm sure he doesn't care at this point, but if you really want people to believe that story, don't sign with the West Coast team. So there you have that. Erod's off the board. Gray is off the board. We've known that. The Braves did make a signing today. It was a minor signing. It was someone that we non-tendered. Remember at the non-tender line, we made all these moves and everyone oohed and aahed and whatnot? Well, Angel Perdomo is back with the Atlanta Braves. Signs a deal that is it's a split deal, meaning he will get paid accordingly whether he makes the big league club or he ends up in the minor leagues. So it's not a guaranteed major league deal like some of these. And what is Perdomo? Perdomo is, at this point, You could probably use the term journeyman, left-hander. He's gonna be 30 years old, very early part of 2024 season. If you're looking at what he's done, he's only pitched three seasons in the major leagues. He pitched in 2020, 2021. He did not pitch in the majors in 22, and he pitched in 23. In 23, this past season, a 3.72 ERA. 29 innings. He's a reliever. 29 innings. Now, in those 29 innings, he did have a high strikeout rate. He's got a strikeout rate of 13.7. But he's a guy that the Braves hope contributes to the major league roster. But remember, to get through 162-game season, you don't just need the 13 pitchers that we're going to see on opening day. You usually need somewhere between 25 and 30 to get through the whole damn thing. And you hope that your regular position players can stay fairly healthy and you don't have to gut your 40-man roster at some point. But it's a grind, and they're just looking for depth is all that is. Summit will get here in 1 second on the pitchers that are available. So there has been moving and shaking. And once again, Perdomo is going to be 30 years old. Don't expect the moon and the stars. But if he does get a spot on the roster, what you could expect is a guy who has a high strikeout rate. And with that, along with that, he's also got a fairly high walk rate. That's pretty common. He walks 3.4 per nine innings. You'll usually live with that if you're striking out 13.7. But usually this is what you get. A guy with a high strikeout rate usually has a high walk rate, and he is no different. If you want to look at the plus side for Perdomo, this past season was his best season. It's not even close. He had the two seasons that he had Milwaukee in 20 and 21. He was awful. I mean, 2020, and we know that that was one of those asterisk years, but he only pitched 2 2/3 innings, gave up 6 earned runs. The following year, they brought him back. He pitched 17 innings, gave up 12 earned runs. Still had a high strikeout rate. He had, 17 innings in 2021 and struck out 28? But once again, the high walk rate was there. His walk rate in 21 was 8.5. So it's one of these things where he's just trying to get a hold of his hone his craft, as they say. Kelenic, wanted to go over him real quick just to give you an idea of what are we getting out of Jared Kelenic. Because Kelenic, we know that everybody has talked about how he was one of the top, and I mean one of the top prospects in baseball for a few years there. He has not really ever lived up to the hype, but at the same token, he's only 24 years old. And in his 3 years of service, he's played 252 games, and in those 252 games, 32 home runs. What you can expect from Kelenic this year is probably an opportunity to play somewhere about half the games, if not more, depending on health with everybody. He's going to be a platoon in left field with Vaughn Grissom. We got news on Vaughn Grissom. He is going to get outfield reps in the Puerto Rican League this winter. So that already tells you where the Braves' head is at. If they don't move Grissom, he is going to be a part of the Kelenic left field. Obviously, you could also DH him from time to time. And I'm sure that they'll give Marcelo Ozuna some reps out there in left field. And remember what we heard right before the playoff series versus Philly. They are planning on giving Marcelo Ozuna some reps at first base this year. And what that's really for is to just give Matt Olson some rest. It's not going to turn into a platoon situation. You're not going to platoon a guy who just hit 50 bombs, right? But it's more of just to give him a rest, because Olson, along with a lot of these other guys, and I'm all for it, I don't think you should rush these guys out there every single day, because sometimes they just need a mental break to get out of a slump. Sometimes their body just needs a break. Sometimes it's a situation much like you do with the catchers with the day-night doubleheader, a day-night turnaround, or a night-day turnaround, I guess is what I should say, where the game is being played at night. And the next day, especially in Atlanta, man, I hope they change some of those. But those awful, god-awful, we'll finish a game at 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, and then they turn around and play 12:20 the next day, which I've never understood, because what the hell is the rush? And I get it. There's a lot of these are getaway days. But my God, you can't start the games. Most teams on their day games, for folks who only follow the Braves, they usually don't start till 1:10, sometimes 1:30, 1:40 in the afternoon. It is very rare that you get any other team other than the Braves. I want to say Cincinnati's the other team, but most teams don't play before noon for good reason. It's just you're just dragging ass, and you increase the chance of some kind of an injury the next day. But if we do have those, at least the Braves will have opportunity in the outfield at the DH position. And if they're going to have Ozuna play some first base, it's going to give Olson a chance to get the day off. And it may be a situation where Ozuna goes out over there to play first base for a day game, but Olson is still your designated hitter. But Kelenic is a guy that I'm expecting to get somewhere around 350 at-bats. Maybe a touch less, maybe a touch more. And what you're hoping in that offense, because you expect he's going to be at the very bottom of the offense. He's a left-handed hitter. I don't know if they would put him back-to-back with Michael Harris. I would think Harris is probably going to graduate a little higher in the order this year. So Kelenic could be your number 9 hitter. And if he's your number 9 hitter, you know how many fastballs that man's going to see? Because Ronald Acuña Jr. is lurking on deck. So I would hope that out of Kelenic, he batted 253 this year. If we could get that batting average just a touch up, and maybe get his slugging just a touch up, we could have a guy with an OPS over 800. He has a career OPS of 746. And let me double check. And it's exactly what, okay, so I'm sorry, his career OPS is 656, but last year it was 746. We could get an OPS somewhere around 800. That'll play. And so looking at what he can bring to the team, I think Kalenic's going to be a very good addition. And controllable years, young kid, left-handed bat, that really does help out. Because if you look at this team, we've got Harrison, we've got Olsen. The rest of it's been a pretty heavy right-hitting lineup outside of course, Eddie Rosario, who had his moments. I don't want to sit here and just tear down Eddie Rosario. Eddie Rosario had his moments in the Braves. Even outside of the 2021 playoffs, he had his moments. But what I'm excited to see about Kalenic, and we'll just have to see who he is, because, look, I haven't sat here and watched him for an entire season. But what I'm interested to see about Kalenic, and hopefully this is not the case with him, is Eddie Rosario gave away too many at-bats. And there's no other bigger example of that than his final at-bat as an Atlanta Brave with the game on the line in the playoffs. In the playoffs. Against the Phillies. Our last shot. Ninth inning. And he comes up against a guy who could not find the strike zone and starts hacking away in first pitch, weak pop-up into left field. That's what I'm excited to see go away. And I would think Kalenic, as young as he is, can be taught the right way, can be taught to go there, look for your pitch, work your pitch. Yeah, there's going to be times you're going to ambush. You're not always going to take the first pitch. You can't do that because if you do that, then you're just asking to get a first pitch strike and falling behind the pitcher every single time. But the difference was there were two things that Eddie Rosario never did well. He never laid off the high cheese that he could not hit. He was a low ball hitter. And he would not lay off the high cheese. And he was not very good at working the count. And then to top it off, in the outfield, he was a disaster. He was subpar at best. I know they put him up for the Gold Glove, but that just tells you how weak the left field Gold Glove was in the National League this year. They don't do it like you would think they would do it, where they say, hey, we're going to take the best three outfielders. They literally say you have to be in left field X amount of games, center field, right field, what have you. So that's the other big piece. And then the other one that we haven't really talked much about, Ronaldo Lopez, as the dust starts to settle here on the winter meetings. Ronaldo Lopez, I still think he's going to be our bullpen guy. I think he's a guy that's going to come out and give us some spot starts. But when you look at Lopez and you look at what he has done, if you compare Ronaldo Lopez's numbers from career as a starter, his career as a leader, as a reliever, here you have it. As a starter, 97 games he has started. Ronaldo Lopez has a 4.73 ERA. He has a 1.37 whip and 7.7 strikeouts per nine. That's okay, but you don't go out and give a man 4 years, $30 million for that. As a reliever, 144 games, appearances. He has a 3.01 ERA, so an ERA less than 1.6. Huge difference. A whip, walks plus hits dividing by innings pitch. A whip of 1.07. And we talk about this all the time. If you can have a guy whose whip is below 1.2, you love it. Below 1.1, you're ecstatic. 1.07, along with 9.6 strikeouts per nine innings, a strikeout an inning, that's elite level reliever. And I don't believe that the Atlanta Braves went in to sign Ronaldo Lopez to be an average starter as opposed to being a dominant reliever. So I do believe that that's where we're going to find him in the bullpen. Not to mention the fact that since he's been in the bullpen, his velocity has gone up a couple of ticks. He was topping out at 98 routinely last year in the bullpen. I saw one report that said that he hit 99 a couple of times, but routinely he was between 96 and 98. I mean, as we all know, that's what these bullpens are going to, straight gas. And we now are getting guys that can bring it. Bummer, Aaron Bummer, the left-hander, he's got hard gas that he can bring as well. The Braves are going to have an elite bullpen. I'd be shocked if they don't. All right, as far as other things going on in the world of baseball, the Padres, since they moved Juan Soto, evidently they have come to the forefront as the favorites to land Young-Ho Lee, outfielder coming over from the KBO. And they believe that that was one of the reasons why they were moving Soto, is that they are big on Young-Ho Lee and they didn't want to have a logjam out there. So realistically, right now, the Padres' only outfielder is Fernando Tatis. Expect them to be heavy players in the outfield. And I do believe this is going to be a bit of a rebuild for the Padres, but they don't have it in their DNA to just tank. They're still going to be competitive, but it's more of them pivoting in a different direction. We talked about E-Rod going to Arizona, 4 years, $80 million, 10-team, no trade clause once again. Joe Kelly. Did y'all see this? Joe Kelly wears number 17. Joe Kelly re-signed with the Dodgers, and we're going to go over some of the signings I think a lot of folks might have missed over the last several days, because a lot of them have come in. You just don't get the national media that really talks about the minor moves. But Joe Kelly re-signed with the Dodgers. And there's a report out there, and this goes into the whole thing with Dave Roberts saying that they met with Ohtani, and everybody had a conniption fit about it, and, oh, how could you even bring it up? He wants to be a private person, blah, 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 which, by the way, is just such a damn disservice to the sport. I'm so tired of everyone tiptoeing around Ohtani and his feels. You are the major free agent in a sport that needs this kind of limelight. For you to get all bent out of shape because someone says they met with you is absurd. And I'm not 100% sure that any of this is actually coming from Ohtani. It's more his camp. But here's the other thing. Here's the other interesting fact. Did you realize that? I did not realize it until I heard them talking about yesterday or whatever. Ohtani, when he got the MVP award, Ohtani had his dog at the press conference, and I guess he refused to tell anyone the dog's name. What? Who gives a crap? First of all, I don't give a crap about his dog's name, but if the media is sitting there and you bring the dog along for the interview, you're not going to give him the dog's name? If you're going to be that secretive and that private about yourself, then why the hell have the dog there at all? If you're that worried about someone doing something, then let's work on the assumption you don't have a pet. So anyways, that whole thing, I'm so glad the Braves are not going to be involved with that nonsense. Because as talented as he is, I do believe wherever he lands, he is going to make it very difficult to win on the big level, because you're going to spend so much money on one player, and you better hope that he has the kind of years that he just had of the next 10 seasons, assuming he signs a 10-year contract. It could be a 12 or 13, but let's say it's a 12-year contract. You better hope he has the kind of season he just had for at least six of them, because if not, it's a waste of money. And I get it that you're going to sell a lot of jerseys. You're going to expand your brand a little bit. There's going to be people in Japan who never cared about whatever team. We'll say a random team that is in the mix. Like, you know, like the Giants, who's never been on Japan's radar, or the Cubs. I get that part of it. You better, because if not, what you've turned it into, it's just a circus that people are going to come out to watch him play, and that's it. They're not going to come out there to watch wins, and as a fan, I don't want any part of that. The other thing was, so Joe Kelly, back to my point, he signs the deal. They asked him if he was okay. I can't remember if I got this point out or not. If he was okay with giving up his number 17 to Ohtani, if Ohtani signs it, he said that he was fine with it. I think he said, I'd be honored to give it to him. So there's not going to be, you know, a lot of times when these guys move to other teams and they want a number, they got to pay the other guy something. Which, hey, if I'm Joe Kelly, I'm like, Ohtani, come on now. Come on, baby. You just got $600 million. Can I at least get a steak dinner out of this number? Something. But we'll see how that works out. I don't believe Ohtani's a bad guy. I just think there's a circus around him that I don't think he's worth it. I would if I was going to go out and be willing to spend $60 million a year on one player, I'd rather go out and spend $30 million on two. And I mean, you're talking about having elite players at that point. So I really don't get the whole hubbub around it. So we have that. We got Vaughn Grissom is going to get outfield reps in the Puerto Rican League. They mentioned that. And evidently, now, pump the brakes on expectations, but I want the deal done so that we can move on and the rest of Major League Baseball can move on, because it really is holding everything up. But they are saying that by the end of this coming weekend, so what is that? December, what is the Sunday? December 10th? They expect Shohei Ohtani to sign wherever the hell he's signing at. So let's hope that actually happens. Let me catch up with some of the things here said in the chat. See, Leslie wanting to know what pitcher do you think the Braves will get? I'll get to that in 1 second. Leslie says Glasnow or Jordan Montgomery is who they would like. Coach Gay says he thinks he gets Glasnow. Summit says Lugo, Glasnow, or Ryu. And Lonnie, good to see you in here again today. So, all right, let's talk about the ones that we just referred to here. Okay. Glasnow. Once again, if we're going to get Glasnow, there's an up and there's a down about it. The up about it, and the reason why it's kind of a realistic get, is because Glasnow is in the American League, and I don't believe Tampa Bay wants to trade Tyler Glasnow to anybody in the American League. I think they want to move him to the National League, because the last thing they want to do is trade him, and he's only got 1 year left. So when it's all said and done, when you get years down the road, it doesn't really matter, because whoever he gets traded to is probably not going to re-sign him. But you don't want to have to run into him several times in the regular season or in the playoffs. If you run into him in the World Series, you know what? You'll take that risk. Hell, you made it to the World Series. So I do believe Glasnow is going to end up in the National League. There have been three teams that have been consistently rumored for Tyler Glasnow. The Atlanta Braves have been right there at the top. I would tend to think the Dodgers would be in play, but we have not heard the Dodgers much on Glasnow. We've heard them much more on Dylan Cease. So the Atlanta Braves have been rumored quite a bit. The St. Louis Cardinals have been rumored quite a bit. And, man, they've already added three starters, but realistically, two of those starters are back-of-the-rotation starters. And then the other team, this is the dark horse that is really starting to pick up steam, and I'm surprised by it just because of their track record. But they are talking about Tyler Glasnow getting moved to the Cincinnati Reds. And it doesn't feel right because I'd never expect the Reds to trade, because they are loaded with talent. I never expect the Reds to trade any of their guys, their long-term guys, for a one-year rental. But if you put Tyler Glasnow in the Cincinnati Reds rotation, along with, now depending on what they have to give up, but let's say they keep the majority of their core, I hate to break it to the Cubs fans and Cardinal fans, to me, they become the front runner in the division. Now, that's assuming Glasnow stays healthy. And I know that's a big if, because he has not really stayed healthy for quite some time. But this is all assuming. And if that happens, man, I mean, if he can't land in Atlanta, that would be a fun team to see him at, is in Cincinnati. I do not believe it's going to be the Cardinals, even though they've been rumored a lot, because A, they've already added three starting pitchers, and B, the only way this thing works is if Tyler O'Neill is something Tampa Bay really wants, because the St. Louis Cardinals have already come out and said that they are shopping Tyler O'Neill, which is really odd because you never see that. You never see a front office specifically name a player. They normally say, well, we are talking to people, but we're going to leave it at that. You know, we're shopping. You know, we have a bunch of outfielders, but you don't name names. They specifically name Tyler O'Neill. So I don't know if there's bad blood between them and everyone else in the organization. I don't know what's going on with that, but Tyler O'Neill's being shopped, and he's got a high window, and he's got a couple of years of control yet left. And if that's something, because what we keep hearing from the Rays side is that they're trying to get rid of Randy Arozarena, and Randy Arozarena is being rumored to possibly be heading towards Seattle. Now, I had a pie in the sky dream trade where the Braves made a mega deal and got Arozarena and Glasnow from the Rays. That's obviously not happening with Jared Kelenic coming in. Unless we pivot and we move Kelenic in that deal. But, I mean, can you imagine that outfield? Arozarena, Michael Harris, Ronald Acuna Jr. I wouldn't give a damn if Tyler Glasnow stayed healthy or not. That would be a heck of a trade. Jaime Candelario did sign a 3-year deal with the Reds, so I found that pretty interesting. That is a good stick that they just added. Third baseman. He is a switch hitter, has good power. He's only 30 years old. It's a 3-year deal for $45 million, and there's going to be a team option, club option, for the fourth year. So I think it's a good deal for Candelario because he's kind of a late bloomer, and it's a great deal for the Reds getting bang for their buck. Very excited to see what the Reds do here in 2024. So some of the guys that should be available, and going to go ahead and hit these up because we're talking about starting pitching. I do believe they could still add one, maybe two arms into the bullpen. I would love to see a Josh Hader come in. I just don't think that's where the Braves are going to go. If they bring in Josh Hader, that probably means that they're trading Iglesias. And the temperature has not felt that way. It feels like Iglesias is going to be our closer this coming year, but he's going to have a hell of a supporting cast. Man, oh man, if we can get Dylan Lee back, if we can get Aaron Bummer rocking and AJ Minter doing AJ Minter things, that's going to be a nasty three-headed southpaw. I mean, good night, Irene. All right, these are the guys that are still around that we could realistically be in the market for. It still feels like, if you really want to know, that's right, Tyler Matzik should be back. I don't believe we expect him back at the beginning of the year. The last report that I read made it sound like he was going to be back sometime before the All-Star break, but we all know how that ends up. Every time they tell you that, we'll see you in August. But it'd be great if we saw him by May or June. I seriously doubt we see him in April. But Tyler Matzik, Coach, that is a great point, because that's the alpha dog that we need in that locker room. I wonder if there's a way to bring back old Luke Jackson, maybe get him under control. Because, he's had some bad innings since he went out west. But, man, he still has that fastball. All right, so here are some guys that we haven't really gotten into much on here that are available. And this would be if the Dylan Cease or Glasnow. I still think those are the two main guys that they are going to be aiming for. And I did read, this is another interesting thing. I read another report, and this to me tells me we might be on to something with the Dylan Cease thing. When I say we, I mean all of us here in Braves country, because I know it's been a big topic all throughout the offseason. There was a report that came out that said that, and if you believe this stuff, I know a lot of it's fabricated, but it said that the Braves put together a very good offer for Dylan Cease, but Alex Anthopoulos and company are getting tired of them dragging their damn feet. Meaning, and now look, they didn't say what was in the offer, but basically what they were saying is they don't want to sit around all damn offseason, and then all of a sudden the White Sox pivot, send Dylan Cease to Los Angeles or wherever, and then we're caught holding the bag, and we're having to try to piece things together and going out and sign a Martin Perez or a, Sean Manaea. Yeah, that's so, and nothing against those guys personally, but there's a big difference between bringing in a Dylan Cease and bringing in someone that's going to be, well, we'll see how many starts we can get out of this guy. I still believe that we have a decent shot at getting Corbin Burnes. The thing that hurts us with Corbin Burnes, although we have made trades with the Brewers in the past, is that I don't know if they are willing to send Corbin Burnes to the National League. It feels like to me that there it's a better chance that Corbin Burnes ends up with like the Baltimore Orioles. So, Corbin Burnes, if everything's being equal, that's probably the guy that I would want, because I know what he's been in big spots. Glasnow probably has the best stuff, but Glasnow has had a hard time being healthy. Cease has the most controllable years left, so I totally get that conversation. But I also believe you're going to see the Braves do something in the very near future. There's a couple of things that are happening. A, winter meetings are finally coming to an end. So you clear that hurdle. People get back to their offices and they're like, all right, guys, look, come on. What the hell? The other thing is Ohtani comes off the board. He comes off the board, we're going to start seeing guys flying off of free agency. Because once he comes off the board, they're going to feel like it's a game of musical chairs and they don't want to be stuck standing when the music stops. A guy who's going to be a free agent, but it will be interesting to see who gives him something, because he will not pitch in 2024. But could be someone on the Braves' radar to give him a very low end in 24, approve it in 25, and a club option for 26 would be Brandon Woodruff. Keep an eye on that. He's 31 years old this spring. Woodruff picked a really bad time to hit the market. Woodruff is now injured. He will not pitch in 24. It's one of the reasons why most believe that Corbin Burnes is going to be out, because the Brewers are not – the Brewers are more likely to rebuild than anything else this year, because they lost their manager. They lose Woodruff. A lot of moving parts leaving the building. What's the point of holding on for Corbin Burnes to finish third or fourth in the Central? So that's the idea behind that. I don't believe that we're in on Blake Snell. I think he's going to have a high AAV. He has never really pitched that many innings. The one that I would love to see, but once again, so his market value is only 18. We talked about this, I believe, yesterday. Jordan Montgomery is going to be 31 this year. His AAV is around 18, or market value estimation is 18.4. So what if you go to Jordan Montgomery, you give him an E-Rod type of deal, 4 years, $80 million, give me a club option, and let's go. That to me seems like something that would be very gettable. Now, I think Montgomery's more likely to re-sign with the Rangers. But depending on what the Rangers decide to do, remember, they're going to be without DeGrom most likely for the majority of the year, if not the entire year. There's a slight chance DeGrom could come back late in 24, but it's a very, very small chance. They're going to be on the hook and have to find a place to put Max Scherzer. He has been awful. So if you're Texas and you got Bruce Bochy there, you know he's not going to manage forever. You know they're going back at it again. I feel like Jordan Montgomery is going to end up back in Texas, but I would love to see that addition. The other guys of interest, let's hit a couple of guys we have not talked about. Now, these guys are flyers, but I believe these are guys you could get very, very cheap on almost prove-it type of deals, probably like a one-year deal. What about a Frankie Montas? What about a Tyler Mahle? Michael Wacha's going to want a long-term deal, and I'm not convinced Wacha's going to be worth. His AAV is being projected right there, I mean, just under Jordan Montgomery. No way in hell I would give him the same amount of money I would give Montgomery. Lucas Giolito would be a little bit of a cheaper option. You could probably get him a two-year, $20 million deal and maybe a club option for a third. But everything coming out of his camp makes it sound like the Lucas Giolito expects, though he's not going to get, a much longer deal. Seth Lugo still out there in the mix. Very, very manageable. And when before people overreact and say, well, I don't want Seth Lugo. Seth Lugo sucks. Seth Lugo is also being projected to make half of what Jordan Montgomery is going to make. He's going to make half of what Michael Wacha is going to make. So Seth Lugo can be brought in for a 2 or 3 year deal. You could probably get Seth Lugo today with a 3 year, $27, $28 million deal, club option with a $1 or $2 million buyout. Maybe we'll say 3 for $27 or 3 for $28, the $2 million buyout, which means he's guaranteed 30. But you could pick up that final year for somewhere around the 8 or 9 deal. And Lugo has got experience, not just starting but also relieving. So if for some reason it didn't work out, you could always throw him in the pen. So I'm not in love with the idea of Lugo, but I don't hate it either. I think you can make much, much worse decisions. I'll give you an example. Jack Flaherty is coming in at $11.1 million. It's his market value. Jack Flaherty has not been worth a damn in 3 years. There's no way I'm giving Jack Flaherty that kind of money. Another one, Vincent Velasquez. They're projecting him at $8.1 million. Are you nuts? He's going to be 32 years old. He's never been consistent. See, Julio Teheran, that would be a fun story, and I think you could probably get Julio back into Atlanta at 1 year, $4 million, $1 million, $5 million. Let me see if there's anybody else that Noah Syndergaard's another one. Now, his market value, I don't even know where they're getting this from. They got his market value right under $9 million. There is no way in hell that Noah Syndergaard is on the same level as like a Seth Lugo. There is no way in hell. A couple of guys that don't even have a market value because they're not expected to be that great, that's out there for one of those guys that you would invite to spring training kind of thing would be Sean Manaea. Another guy that you could be looking at. And someone sent this as a message the other day. I don't believe the Braves have any interest in bringing back Colby Allard. He didn't really match up to anything. James Kaprielian is another one that I think a lot of people remember when he was really good a couple years ago. Now, I'll tell you a guy who is interesting because he's still only 29 years old. He's a free agent. I don't believe you'd have to give him a whole lot. In fact, you could might even bring him in on a prove-it deal. Chris Flexen. Chris Flexen at one point was the belle of the ball. Chris Flexen, free agent. He's had some ups and downs, but he still has pretty good stuff. That, to me, is a name that's out there that you got to keep an eye on. We've talked about Trevor Bauer. I don't believe. It feels like he's getting blackballed. Trevor Bauer is going to be 33 years old this year. There's no reason he's already been acquitted of. It has been proved that not only were the allegations false, but they were highly fabricated. Still has pretty good stuff, I would think. He's only 32, going to be 33 this year. But nobody's talking about Trevor Bauer. It feels like a black ball. And let me see. I thought there was one more on this list that was most of these guys down here at the bottom. I mean, Zach Thompson has had some good innings over the years. I'll be interested to see if I think he's more likely to sign a minor league deal. And let me see here. Jake Odorizzi, man. I wonder who's going to. You realize Jake Odorizzi and Rich Hill are still in for free agency? I can't wait to see. And they have Rich Hill's market value at $9.4 million. Who the hell's paying Rich Hill $9.4 million? He's going to be 44 years old on opening day. 44! $9 million? Get the hell. You wouldn't give him half of that. Same thing, they got Zach Greinke sitting there, his market value at $10.4 million. Oh, come on. That is just never going to happen. I honestly would not hate the idea of bringing Alex Wood in to see what he had left. His market value is a little high at 5.9, but you could probably get him a touch below that. But I think two guys that have phenomenal talent that we're not going to see given a chance, Trevor Bauer and Julio Urias. Julio Urias for good reason. Yeah, I think a lot of people have forgotten about. That's the second time that he's gotten in trouble with the domestic violence in about the past 5 years. I remember when we were doing a morning radio show and the news broke during that show and the details came out and it was some frightening details. And everyone kind of swept it under the rug. And then just about the time, you know, and I would bring it up from time to time. I'd say, hey, what the hell ever happened with Julio Urias in his domestic violence? And then just about the time it started to fade, I never really forgot about it, but I was done bringing it up. Here we go again. Couple other guys, but before we have to jam out of here, you know, you're looking at some of these guys that are on the cusp. Here's another one that's just a head scratcher when you look at the market value. I really have to question this. There's no way he gets this number. Mike Clevenger, who at one point was looked upon as one of the best, his market value is 13.7. He's going to be 33 years old on opening day. There is no way anyone is going to bring Mike Clevenger, 13.6, 13.7 right there in that number. He is going to be a guy that, hell, he might be a minor league invite. He's fallen off the cliff that bad. The same thing with Carlos Carrasco, but he's a little long in the tooth. He's 37. His market value is 6.7. I have no interest in any of those guys. But right now, if I'm handicapping on who the Braves actually have interest in, we talked about the trade market. Corbin Burns, Tyler Glasnow, Dylan Cease, any of them would be a great addition. As far as who's sitting out there on the free agent market, if I'm picking, I want Jordan Montgomery. But I have a feeling he's not leaving Texas. He seemed like he was pretty happy there. And you can't fault a guy from wanting to. And like, Texas has proven that they will pay the freight. All right, we're going to jump out of here. See y'all Monday at 4. Have a great weekend, y'all. Braves Country coming your way all during the offseason, Mondays and Thursdays at 4 going forward.
You're in Braves Country.